trying to get the recorder on. All right, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first 15-minute speaker. I watched this young man come in. He was broken. The way it was said is a young man with a tormented soul. He really had the F the world mentality, chip on his shoulder. Didn't want anything to do with AA. Just very defiant, just across the board. And I've definitely watched the promises come true in this man's life. I've watched God work through him. I watched him work with other men. And I watched that miracle happen. And just without further delay, I want to introduce our first speaker, Roof.
My name is Roof. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Roof. We love you, Roof. Lots and lots and lots. And
how y'all doing tonight? Woo! I'm freaking nervous. Okay. All right. Holy crap, that's loud. You know, I'm gonna, in real quick, real fast, in about 15 minutes, I'm gonna tell you how I became recovered from alcoholism and how AA saved my life and how I found a power greater than myself that has made all that possible. Holy crap. And for the record, it's really good to see you, Daniel. I'm really glad you're doing all right. Anyway, I'll get started. I'm going to read with this. When I get nervous, I talk real fast. If you've ever talked to anybody from Louisiana, that's kind of how I talk when I start talking really fast. So I apologize in advance if you can't understand me. I'm like Boomhauer from King of the Hill. All right. Here we go. This is from the doctor's opinion. This really defines my first step and kind of what it was like and all that kind of stuff for me. It says, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems to be the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomena of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. And that's my experience. You know, I'm not an alcoholic because I was molested as a child. I'm not an alcoholic because my father was an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic because I came from a nice family, then we became a poor family. Not an alcoholic because I got arrested, because I sold drugs, any of that stuff. I'm an alcoholic for one reason and one reason only. It's because when I drink alcohol, it affects me unlike a normal human being, which is I have something called an allergy that once I start to drink, I can't stop. And without a spiritual experience or a psychic change, I can't be saved. And that's my experience. You know, I'll talk real quick what it was like. You know, I'm from a little town in Texas called Midland, Texas. If you've ever seen the movie Friday Night Lights, it's like where football is God, and that is it. And that's where I'm from. It smells like oil, and that's about it. You know, and alcohol, to give you an idea, alcohol stripped everything away from me when I was a little like. The way to explain this would be, I had a lot of hopes and dreams growing up. You know, I wanted, like, growing up in Texas, you know, going to University of Texas was, like, the big dream, you know, for college. And as my drinking progressed and as it got worse and worse and worse, I was like, well, I'll go to University of Houston because I ended up moving there eventually. So that'll be easier to get into. I'll know some people, a little smaller, no big deal. I'll go to HCC because it's small classes. You know, I'll get better one-on-one teaching and stuff. And granted, I have no idea. Well, I've never been in a college class, and to this day, I have no idea if that's true or not. And then as that continued, it's like, well, you know, I'll just graduate high school and, like, get work on an oil rig or something, or just sell drugs the rest of my life because I'm pretty good at that. You know, so that's what I'll do. And then it was, well, I'll just get my GED. I'll just drop out of high school. I'm going to die by the time I'm 18, so it really doesn't matter anyway. That's my experience. You know, I never thought that I would get to a point of complete hopelessness. I never thought that a drink could beat me. I thought I was better than that. I thought I was smarter than that. I didn't think I was like my father. And sure as shit, I ended up just like him. The only difference between me and him is I admitted that I had a problem, and I took the solution, not by choice. You know, I moved out to Tucson, Arizona by the Texas state court system. They asked me to leave and never to come back. You know, it's funny, but it's really not. It kind of sucks. I can go home now, so it's all right. But what ended up happening is I came out here. I was facing about 22 years in prison. That doesn't make me an alcoholic either, but I had a lot of stuff that was, you know, if a normal person is facing 22 years in prison, like, I should probably stop drinking because that's why I'm going to jail. And me, I was like, no, I'm going to jail because if the cop wasn't there at that exact moment, at that exact time, I would have never been arrested. And if I wasn't ever arrested, I wouldn't have been in this predicament. And if my mom didn't nag me so much and, you know, she gave me more money than she gave me, I wouldn't have sold drugs anyway. And if my high school wasn't the way that it was, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. And, you know, and then I wanted to be like Tony Montana, and that didn't work out either. But whatever. So let's wrap this up and get into some solutions. So I come out to Tucson, didn't want anything to do with it. I have prison hanging over my head. I'm in a rehab center where prison, you know, going to rehab was like the alternative. You know, and I wanted to go to prison because I thought it'd be cool to get like prison tattoos and like get out and like have a cool story. But to be honest, I was actually terrified going to jail. I just put up the front that I was this tough cat, and I really wasn't. And I was a scared little boy. I got sober when I was 17. Fast forward is I ended up, you know, stealing about $5,000 from the lady that ran the place. We found a cocaine connection, bought a pound of weed, buried it in the back, and for 4 more months while I was in Tucson, continued to do what I do. And then what ended up happening is shit hit the fan, and I was about to go back to jail. I wasn't okay with that. And this guy and a few other people pulled me aside and, in a sense, shared the truth with me, what's in this book. You know, I won't go into too much detail with it, but pretty much opened my eyes to my condition. You know, I remember I was like hanging out in AA, and like I had a fake sponsor, and I was working fake steps, and I did a fake 4-step, and I'm just going to tell you, if you're not honest, it doesn't work. And I did all that stuff. I was doing the routine. I was sharing in AA meetings. I was picking up chips, all that crap. And then what ended up happening is when I got truth about myself after I got in all that trouble, and I learned what I was, it finally made sense. When I learned that I was an alcoholic was probably the greatest moment of my life. It's when everything made sense. It's when I was like, oh my God, that's what's wrong with me. Because for the longest time, I was going through life going, I don't know if I need to go to a doctor and get like prescriptions. I don't know if I need to be killed. But something is not right. Something was not right up here. You know, and what I've learned is it's not only physical, but it's mental. You know, I have a problem is I can stop, but I can't stay stopped. You know, in the insanity of my diseases, I go back to it after I make commitment after commitment after commitment. You know, there's been so many times that, you know, I could tell you honestly in this moment when I told my mom or I told my PO that I was going to stop and I would stop for good, I meant it. I meant it. And what ended up happening? Went right back to it. You know, and story of my life. You know, and when I got an understanding of my condition and I understood the allergy and I understood the insanity, you know, because for me, insanity isn't running down the street buck naked. That's just stupidity. Insanity for me comes with alcohol because I know not to play with a rattlesnake. I know not to play with a shark. But when it comes to alcohol, for some reason, I just don't know. It's like, I'm going to figure out a way to, you know, play with it. You know what I mean? So anyway, to fast forward, in my experiences, the steps saved my life. AA has saved my life. A higher power of my own understanding has saved my life. You know, I don't know how much time I have. I'm like all freaked out, like when the 10-minute thing's gonna come up. But there's your sign. All right. Anyway, you might be a redneck. No, anyway. What I'd like to talk about real quick. Does this mean I have 10 minutes left, or it's been 10 minutes? Oh, okay. I have 10 minutes left. All right. Sorry. I'm really nervous. What I really like to talk about is not just because I know Lindsay up here, she's going to talk a lot. She has a lot more time than I do to talk about everything. You know, for me, what has been the most powerful thing is that AA has given me purpose. When I was about 11 months sober, I didn't really see the point of staying sober anymore. I would go to meetings. I had a bunch of friends, if you want to call it that, you know, and I would show up to meetings and I'd hear people talk and I was like, is this really my life? Is this really all I have to live for? And I was kind of at a crossroads if I wanted to stay sober anymore because I just didn't see the point. And it wasn't that I wasn't having fun. It's just like I had no purpose, you know, and I switched sponsors. I got a new sponsor who got me real hopped up on 12-stepping people, giving back, carrying the message. And You know, if there's one thing that has saved my butt, or whatever you want to say, I don't know if I can cuss. I've already done it, I think, once, so. But, you know, it saved my butt is carrying the message. Because there's been so many times that I've been not okay in AA, and working with a sponsee or even coming up and sharing at the podium has really changed my recovery. You know, and I actually sponsor a young guy right now who's just like me. Like identically like me, and it's kind of freaky. I don't know if you've had that experience with a sponsee, like our stories are exactly the same, and it's really incredible getting an opportunity to be a service to that young man, and the few other guys I get to work with. But yeah, overall, you know, that was a piece to giving me purpose. You know, I finally had a reason to live, so to say. You know, because just going to meetings don't work for me. It works for you, okay, but for me it doesn't work. It just doesn't. You know, I can't do the meeting makers makes it. I just can't. You know, I need more. You know what I mean? Kind of like drinking. I needed more, but I need more of this. I need more spirituality. I need something. You know, and when I got on that kick, it just became this, like, fire under my ass just to go. You know, and 5 minutes left. So anyway, God, that's distracting. I love you. Back on topic. So anyway, I got a purposeful life, you know, and this is kind of full circle for me. You know, last year I got to serve on the Tucson ASCII Paw host committee. Yeah, that was a lot of fun and resentful and all kinds of stuff. If you want to learn about, if you want to learn how to do some hardcore step work, join a YPAW committee and see what that does to your sobriety. But anyway, that was a great experience, and it kind of sucks because Tucson's probably always going to be remembered for our shooting that we had there, and that was lovely. It was lovely. I was outside when it happened. Yes, and Dennis Wright. That's all people are going to remember. The recovery part totally forgot about. But, you know, back on topic would be, you know, for me, I don't want to rattle off the steps because it kind of gets repetitive and it kind of gets old. But for me, if it wasn't for a first step and understanding that I'm an alcoholic to the core of my being, I wouldn't be here. You know, if it wasn't going through steps 2 to 4, 5 to 6, 7 to 12, all that fun stuff, I wouldn't be here. You know, if I didn't do a 4-step, I wouldn't have found out who I was, what were the causes and conditions, you know, what was the driving force, you know, for my drinking, so to say. You know, and you know, for me, it's been incredible. You know, God, I'm like freaking out up here. But anyway, good luck, Lindsay. But you know, if it wasn't for a 4-step, if it wasn't for, you know, a 9-step amends and making amends to my family and making amends to the people that I had harmed and, you know, cleaning up the wreckage and trying to maintain a spiritual connection and that kind of stuff, I wouldn't be here. You know, because, you know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being a service, but service only gets me so far. If I'm not doing the nitty gritty and I'm not doing the work, I ain't going to stick around. You know, and that's just my experience. You know, that's what works for me. Cause like when I like, cause if I just go to meetings, like I get like, if I'm like just kind of sponsoring guys and just kind of going to meetings, like I get real selfish, you know, and I get real sick and I get real sick real quick. You know, I don't know if it's just cause I'm a sick pup or something, but like I really need the juice from this thing. I really need that life, you know, and that's what this big book gives me. You know, that's what my higher power gives me. But since I'm so selfish, I like to, like, pretend like I've done everything that I've got in my recovery. You know, like, I've worked so hard at my job, and, you know, I got all these sponsees, and life's good, you know. I only need to go to, like, one meeting a week and, like, maybe talk to my sponsees and my sponsor, like, once a month. You know, it's no big deal. You know, then what ends up happening is I get sick and I get miserable when I call my sponsor. Like, oh, my God, I'm freaking out. You know, I'm such a pain in the butt. But, you know, God, man, I'm freaking out up here. I'm sorry, it's like a bad trip that just won't end. So anyway, and I'll kind of close with this because I know another card's about to come my way. You know, my entire life, I had a goal and I had an ideal of who I wanted to be. I was a good person. I was just incapable of doing that because alcohol just destroyed me. You know, I knew right from wrong, I knew all that stuff, but pretty much I was incapable when it came when I was drinking. All bets were off, what was going to happen, what I was going to do. You know, and AA has taught me to become the man that I always wanted to be and I never knew how to be. You know, it's taught me how to be respectful, it's taught me how to treat women with respect. You know, I was an asshole for a long time to women. And it's been kind of an honor and a privilege to be friends with women. You know, every girl that I was friends with back in the day was a failed attempt at having sex with them. You know, and it's the truth. And AA has taught me how to. AA has taught me how to. I'm sorry. I don't love you, James. But anyway, now that I'm totally off topic and this recording's going to make no sense, and I can't emphasize it enough, if you're new, you have no clue what's going on other than people screaming, ASCII, 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 paw, 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 and all that kind of stuff. Give this thing a shot, you know, because when I came in here, I didn't want to do it. I wanted nothing to do with it. And if it wasn't for a few good men getting in my way and showing me the truth about Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't be here. If someone didn't shed light on my condition, if I didn't understand my condition, I wouldn't be here. You know, if someone didn't show me this book and really tell me what it was like to be an alcoholic, I wouldn't be here. You know, it's just been an amazing experience, you know, and you should not miss it, you know. So other than that, you know, I don't know if you guys got anything out of that. It's just been an honor and a privilege. It's kind of come full circle for me. So it's just been a great opportunity, and thank you for letting me share.
The next speaker, our main speaker, the part that says stick on the firing line of life, this woman just does life, you know. She has an amazing spirit, she has a tremendous admiration for AA, she has a great relationship with her God, and she just gives with reckless abandon. You know, I'm grateful to know her, privileged to call her my friend and be included in that circle, and with great pleasure I want to introduce our main speaker, Lindsay from Marin County.
I'm Lindsay, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen, Lindsay. We love you, Lindsay. Lots and lots and lots. And all that is
good. Thank you so much, Ruth. That was such a great beginner. I don't know what to say right now. You did great, and I love you a lot. And I'm really grateful that I got to speak after you, because it's been really great getting to know you through the service that we've had, we've done together. Eddie, thank you so much for asking me to speak. You know, it is an honor and a privilege to be able to speak at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and to be, or do service for Alcoholics Anonymous in any way. And thanks, a huge thanks to the ASCII PAW Host Committee. You guys are doing great. This looks like a great conference so far. I totally know what it's like to, you know, to host a conference and just, like, either be really stoked about it, some of us, and the other ones just want to kill each other. You know, I totally know what that's like. And thank you guys for sticking through it and being of service and having this huge, you know, huge, great conference for us to be able to be at and enjoy sobriety and celebrate sobriety. So I get nervous too. This is my least favorite avenue of service. I would much rather be putting away chairs. I would much rather be doing anything else in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd much rather be working with another alcoholic, with my sponsor, you know, or at any other meeting, you know, in the world, but the one I'm at right now is speaking to you guys. Cause I get cotton mouth really bad. I sweat profusely, you know, I turn red, I get shaky. Thank you for the water. And I would just much rather be behind the scenes, you know, but like I said, you know, I am definitely grateful to be here. I didn't have anything else going on this weekend, and I'm definitely grateful to be here. So, I mean, I couldn't say no. I didn't have a prior commitment, is what I was saying. So, thanks, Eddie, for inviting me to come. Thank you, guys. So I'm just going to start off with a few things. You know, I have a sobriety date. It's November 21st of 2004. I have a sponsor. She knows that she's my sponsor. I have an active relationship with her. I like to say that she's the longest relationship I've ever had and the most successful. I don't argue with her, you know. Well, she doesn't argue with me. She doesn't give me the time of day, you know. But I definitely have tried to, yeah, but. She used to call me Loophole Lindsay because I always had a yeah, but. I'd come to her for a solution, and I'd be like, yeah, but I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's going to work for me, you know. And she's been great. You know, I've been working with her for after my first year of sobriety, and she's shown me everything about accountability, and she's taken me through the steps and helped me to show other women how to go through the steps and take other women through the steps. And honestly, as a result of that, I've had a spiritual awakening. I don't want to drink, you know, and I don't want to kill myself, and I'm excited to live life on a daily basis. I absolutely am head over heels in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. My mom's happy that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. My dad is happy that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. My brother, my grandparents, Novato Police Department, my schools, everyone's really happy that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a home group. I'm from California. So I'm from California, and I do have a home group. If you're ever in California near San Francisco, it's in Marin County. It's the Monday Night Steps to Freedom group. It meets at 7:30. It's a great meeting. It's a, you know, topic speaker discussion meeting, and it's always the steps, and it's a really solid meeting. So if you're ever in town, please come. Like I said, what I did with that sponsor is when I started working with her, I had no idea what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I didn't even really know that I was an alcoholic. I knew I had a problem with drinking. I definitely feel like I caught alcoholism here. You know what I mean? I had no idea what it was to be an alcoholic until I sat down and I read those pages in the big book, and I found myself in those pages of the big book, you know. And like I said, as a result of that, I've had a spiritual awakening, and I get to pass this thing on, you know. So I'm just going to tell you guys, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. Growing up, you know, I grew up in Marin County. I'm a native to where I live. I live in a little town. My great grandparents live there, all that jazz. And so we knew everybody, you know. Growing up, I was a huge tomboy. That was the first thing, is I totally felt like I got dealt the wrong hand. I totally should have been a guy, you know, in my mind. I was never going to amount to anything in the entire world. I was never going to be a Major League Baseball player. I was never all these things like I wanted to do. I felt like I could never do because I was a girl. And I used to try to be a guy, and I would wear baggy jeans, and I would wear big t-shirts and like pipe jeans. I don't know if you guys remember pipe jeans. And I would flick my hair back, you know, and I would go places, and I would just really hope that the people all around would be like, oh my God, she's such a cute little boy, you know, and I would totally just go for that, and I would hope for it. I was like the only girl on the street. I'm huge, huge into sports. I'm a huge athlete. I love, that was like my first escape, you know, when I started playing sports and with schools or with the, you know, with my town or my city, you know, I definitely found myself there. When I was on the field, when I'm playing ball, it's like I'm not worried about anything. And again, you know, I'm 8, I'm 9, you know what I mean? I don't know what I'm worrying about anyways, like what backpack I'm going to get next year, what school, like lunchbox or whatever, like I don't know what huge deal, like issues I'm dealing with. But what I do know is that when I'm on the field, all I can think about is what I'm going to do next. You know, if the ball comes to me in this situation, where am I going to go? You know, and I'm not thinking about whatever's going on now, and I'm just completely far away from reality of what's going on in my life, you know. And I absolutely fell in love with that stuff. So like I said, I didn't want to be a girl. That was probably my only problem, is I didn't want to be a girl when I was. That was about it, you know. I didn't have a terrible childhood. My parents did the best they could with what they had. They honestly did. You know, my dad made sure that there was food on the table. We didn't have very much money, you know, but he definitely did the best that he could with what he had and made sure that we could eat at night, you know, and in the morning and lunchtime occasionally, you know, and we just did what we could. And my mom was really there emotionally for us, and she would always tell us that she loved us and all that stuff, you know. My childhood in general wasn't necessarily the best childhood. I went through a lot of struggles. I think a lot of us have, and a lot of us haven't, you know, and that's because it has nothing to do with why I'm an alcoholic. You know, I've had to explain to my mom over and over and over again when she comes to me and she goes, where did I go wrong? What did I do to mess up? And I think that a lot of you guys can relate to this, but I've had to look my mom in the eye and tell her over and over and over again, there's nothing that you have done that made it impossible for me to put down a drink once I started. There's nothing that you have done, you know. There's nothing that happened to me in my childhood that makes me not an alcoholic at all, you know. Those were just trivial excuses for me to continue to take the first drink. That was it. That was just the feed to my insanity of alcoholism. That was it, you know. But that's definitely not why I took my first drink, and that's not why I'm an alcoholic, and that's not why any of that. And I had to make that clear to my family because they definitely felt guilty. See the cotton mouth starting. Sorry. So when I had my first drink, I was 11 years old. I still wish I could tell you guys, like, I remember everything that happened. You know, it was like this huge, amazing experience. But I can't tell you that. I have no idea what happened. And I don't remember what it was that I drank. I don't remember any of that. I don't even remember where I was or anything like that. All I know is that I went from not drinking to drinking every single day. You know, I remember thinking when I was 11 years old, when everyone was thinking, oh, I can't wait till next weekend, or I hear that a lot in meetings, like, oh man, I couldn't wait till the weekend, I couldn't wait till Friday. Like, I never understood that. I was from the school of thought, like, I cannot wait till tomorrow. You know, I cannot wait till this fades away. Like, it was immediate for me. You know, I drank on a Monday, I drank on a Tuesday, I drank on a Wednesday. I was a straight A student growing up. Once I hit seventh grade, my mom would tell you I came home a completely different person. I was no longer the same Lindsay that walked out of the house to go to school that day. And that day, for whatever reason, I fell into a group of girls who were smoking pot and drinking, you know, and they would talk about it all the time, and they would go to this creek down the street from my school, and all I wanted to do was go to that creek with them. I had never gotten drunk and I had never gotten high, but they talked about it and they made it sound so cool. It was all I wanted to do, you know, it was all that I wanted to do. So finally I got in with that group and I went after school to go to the creek. I eventually fell in love with that creek. That place was the best place I have ever been in my entire life, still to this day. It was so amazing. And like, I was accountable to that creek, you know, like I couldn't be at school one time, but I would be at that creek at 7 a.m. sharp because I knew it was going to be there. You know what I mean? And I was definitely accountable to that creek, and I would get there early. We'd smoke pot before class, I'd go to class, we'd leave at lunch, smoke pot, and then after class, we would go down to the liquor store, shoulder tap for like a billion years when you're 11 trying to get cigarettes, and we would just shoulder tap to buy some cigarettes after rolling some nasty cigarettes out of the ashtrays after bar night, and cool, dude, I was classy, and then I would go down to the liquor store, and for whatever reason, I was the younger one, and I would just steal the booze, and I didn't know what type of booze to drink, I didn't know any of that stuff. But man, this was a process, first of all. We're talking hours, but we were dedicated. And the creek was waiting for us, you know, so we had to be there. But we would go to the liquor store and I would steal the booze that I stole E&J brandy.
Yeah!
Really? Ew. I can't even smell that stuff anymore. It's so nasty. But my mom drank it, you know, and the fact is that it affected, it made something happen for me that I hadn't experienced before, and I absolutely fell head over heels in love with alcohol, you know, absolutely. And every single day, like I said, I would go steal a bottle of E&J, we would drink, and I would go home, go to sleep, and everything would be fine. And my parents knew there was something up, but not really quite sure what, you know. And one day after school, I was walking to go shoulder tap for some cigarettes. Oh God, I was such a degenerate. And my mom drove up for whatever reason, and I was smoking a cigarette, and I had like the cigarette to my mouth, you know, and she drives up and I'm like fucking busted, right? Like I just dropped the cigarette like mid, like, you know, puff. Like, and then I'm like acted like I didn't, like nothing happened, you know? And she just looked at me and she curled her lip, you know, that stare that I was going to become very familiar with later on in the next couple years. But that stare of just disappointment, you know, just like pure, like, what are you doing, right? I thought I was like grounded forever, you know? And I went home. She didn't say anything to me, you know. She didn't say anything to me. And a couple weeks later, we went to go to a ball game. And my mom asked me if I would come with her to go get some drinks and carry him back with her. And I walked over and she lit up a cigarette and she passed one to me, you know. And a couple weeks later, I asked her if she wanted to smoke pot and we smoked pot together. And a couple weeks later, we were drinking together, you know. And I would, at the time, I honestly thought that was like the best thing that could have ever happened to me. I never had to pay for anything ever again, you know? Like, it was like I had, you know what I mean? I never, like, if you wanted to smoke, like, I was never going to throw down. You can come to my house. My mom will drive us. We'll just go, whatever, you know? If you wanted to drink, my mom will buy the booze, you know what I mean? If I was hungover and I didn't want to go to school, my mom would call and sick for me. I didn't really have to ever ditch, you know? I never had to just not show up. My mom co-signed it. And honestly, her and I became best friends. We were like inseparable. I would hang out with her every single night. We would watch CSI and smoke some pot. We would drink, you know, and then I would go to bed and I would go to school, you know what I mean, the next day, and it would just repeat, you know. I'd be at the creek, whatever. It was like all of a sudden, you know, like it was just, it didn't progress. Like it just went from like not getting loaded to getting loaded every single day and drinking every single day for me. And like I said, I was really tight with my mom, but the problem with that is that I don't know how to have a true partnership with another human being at all. And I don't know how to be a friend. And every friend that I've ever had prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, and even in a couple years into Alcoholics Anonymous, I wanted something from. Whether it was money, whether it was a place to stay, whether it was, you know, your boyfriend, whatever it was, I wanted something from you, you know? And with my mom, I wanted just to get loaded. I didn't care about her, you know? I didn't know how to be healthy with another person at all. All I thought about was me, and that was it, you know? And so she started getting a little bit worried about my drinking. You know, I got alcohol poisoning when I was 12 years old. My mom had to come in and pour ice all over my body. I'm foaming at the mouth. My great friends who I had, you know, decided to leave me in my room, in a 100-degree room, when I have alcohol poisoning. And thank God I was able to make it. And I didn't even promise myself I wasn't going to drink. You know, I got back from the hospital that night and I got loaded again. You know, I kept drinking, you know. And at this time, my mom was like kind of fed up with it. And she would tell me that I couldn't leave the house or that I was grounded. And I would just be like, screw you. And I'd walk out the door, you know. Her and my relationship completely just, it was finished. You know, it was completely finished. That relationship that I had so strong with her went away. And it's because I don't know how to treat people at all. I don't know how to have a true partnership with another human being. And so that was probably like the most saddening, you know. Today, it's the strongest part, I think, of my life. You know, my relationship with my family, and it's completely due to a living amends, an active living amends, and taking the steps into my life as a way of life, and really, really, really practicing daily to do that, you know. But at the time, you know, it was pretty heartbreaking, and I was just so selfish, I had no idea. You know, I would be locked up. I started getting locked up pretty early when I was like 12. I just kept going. I couldn't stay at a juvenile hall. And my parents wouldn't visit me, you know, and I would be all pissed off. Me and my brother would both be in there on, like, Christmas, Thanksgiving, and we would be mad at them because they're not visiting us, you know? And, like, I never thought about, like, the fact that they didn't buy a Christmas tree that year, you know? I never thought about the fact that they stopped the tradition of going to my aunt's for Thanksgiving because their kids were locked up. I never thought about that stuff because I'm so self-centered that all I'm thinking about is me, 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 me. And I have no idea the arguments that went on behind closed doors over me and my brother getting loaded, you know, and importantly, me getting loaded, you know. I never took responsibility about that, ever. You know, for a long time I was resentful. I wouldn't have told you my family did the best that they could with what they had. I wouldn't have said that, you know. But after seriously looking at my inventory and realizing what kind of a, you know, what my actions had, like what part my actions had on their life and how I played a role in their life. Man, that was when I really wanted to make that living amends, that's for sure. That was when I really wanted to fix that relationship, is when I saw that I really truly harmed it. But anyways, you know, at that time I wasn't able to see that stuff. I was 12, 13 years old. Drinking was still really, really, really fun for me. Alcohol poisoning here. I'm a blackout drinker, you know. It's so funny because I used to talk about, you know, I was here in meetings and we're always like, oh man, I was a blackout drinker. Like, I just loved it. Like, I just love blacking out all the time. And like, the reality of it is I have no idea if I'm loving being blacked out. Like, I'm usually like pissing on you. I'm fucking, you know, I'm barfing on you or whatever. And I'm like crying and I'm just like throwing stuff across the room. And I'm like talking about how I like love blacking out or whatever. I probably had like the worst night of my life, you know, and like I loved blacking out so much. I have no idea what even happened, you know, but it's like that was my goal every single night, was to not know what happened. And I just thought I had a great time every time, you know, which was just pretty funny to me when I realized that a few years in, as I kept saying it. And I was like, well, I have no idea what even happened on those times, you know. But at the time, like I said, I was having a great time. Drinking was a lot of fun. You know, I was on probation. I didn't really care. I just tried to play the system as hard as I could and try to stay loaded as long as I could, you know. I eventually got kicked out of high school and I got sent to a continuation school. And that was kind of where a lot of stuff changed for me, you know. I had to stop smoking pot. I had to stop drinking because I'm a total blackout drinker, and often, you know, I get arrested and just for whatever, you know, like for whatever I decide that I need to do that night, I end up getting arrested. And I tried staying sober and my PO was really working with me. And I remember I stayed sober from drinking and smoking pot for 50 days, but I was doing other stuff too. And I was like, I told my PO straight up. I was like, I'm not going to give you a drug test anymore. Like, I've stayed sober for 50 days. Doesn't that tell you enough? You know? And of course I'm like counting down 1, 2, 3, and I could barely even do it. And I was still not even sober. You know, I was still getting loaded with whatever else, you know? Eventually, I ran away from home. I started getting into other stuff. Drinking was still a part of it. While I was getting loaded, drinking was still a part of it. I never stopped drinking until the very end. I ran away from home. I would blackmail my mom. You know, my brother at this time, he completely hated me. I sold everything he had in his house, is every, you know, PlayStation, Xbox he's ever had, and pawned it off, you know, and planned robberies in my home. All the stuff that I put my family through, you know. My brother would look at anybody in the face if they ever talked about me or said anything about me behind my back. My brother would have looked at him and said, I completely agree. And he had no respect for me, and honestly, he didn't have any reason to have any respect for me. I never did anything for him, ever, and I didn't do anything for my family, ever, you know. So at the end of my drinking, I ended up getting, well, at this point, I just ended up going off to a treatment facility. I got caught on the run, and they gave me an option. I could either go to a treatment facility, I can go to juvenile hall. And at this time, you know, honestly, like, I had wanted to stop at this time. Like, there was moments where I had wanted to stop. I would wake up in the morning and it didn't matter anymore. Like, I started to realize that I had no mental defense against the first drink. You know, I would wake up in the morning, I would smash bottles, I would break pipes. 15 minutes later, I'd be like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Why did I just do that? Why did I just pour that liquor down the drain? Why did I just break that pipe? Now I gotta start all over from scratch. Now I gotta go to shoulder tap or whatever I had to do. And I gotta go ask my mom or whatever, you know? And I would be beating myself over the head asking why I did it. 15 minutes later, you know? At the end of my drinking, it didn't matter what my goal was in the morning, whether it was to I wake up in the morning and I'm not going to drink, or I wake up in the morning and I'm going to get drunk. No matter what, I come home drunk. You know, I started coming home at night when I did come home before I ran away, and my mom would be waiting up at like 2, 3 in the morning just waiting for her daughter to come home. I think back, my poor father, you know, I can't imagine, I'm going to be so screwed when I have kids, but my poor dad, you know, I'm a 12-year-old girl, he doesn't know where his daughter is. He doesn't know who I'm hanging out with. He knows that they're not good people. You know, he knows that I'm not hanging out with the right people. And I can't imagine the stress that my poor dad had. You know, I put him through hell. I put my whole family through hell, you know. But I would come home at like 2, 3 in the morning. I would look at my mom and I would honestly be done. I was sick and tired of living the way that I was living at some moments. You know, I'd have that moment of clarity where it was like, what am I doing? And like all moments, it passed and I would just continue doing what I was doing. You know, and I would come home and I would look at my mom in the eyes and she would give me that look of disgust and just like, what are you doing? You know, and it would hit me and I'd have that moment of clarity and I'd look at her in the eyes and I would make sweet promises to her. You know, I would tell her I was never going to drink again. You know, I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to go to school. I'm not going to get locked up anymore. I'm going to be a better daughter. You know, all these things, all these sweet promises, and I meant it. You know, I truly did mean it. And it talks about that, and I completely related to this in Bill's story. He talks about going home and making these sweet promises, and he meant business. You know, he meant business, and shortly after he came home drunk. And that was my experience every single day. It didn't matter what my intention was when I woke up, I came home drunk. I completely lost the power of choice and drink. Completely. Completely lost it, you know? And I eventually got shipped off to a treatment facility, and at this point I was in a phase where I didn't want to get sober. I got shipped off to a treatment facility, and what I can tell you that I got out of that was a tan. That was about it. And and like an awkward one, because it was the adolescent unit. I was 14 years old, so you couldn't wear a bathing suit. You had to wear like a shirt and shorts, and so it just looked weird, you know? And it wasn't even a good tan, at least. And I got, what they told me to do is I felt like drinking to call back to the treatment facility. And in my mind at that point, I was like, I'm not calling back to the treatment facility if I want to get loaded. Like, you guys are going to mess it all up. You know what I mean? Like, I want to get loaded if I want to get loaded, right? And that was my mind state. Like, I just wasn't ready, you know? And after a while of being in the treatment facility, I started to listen up a little bit. And what happened for me is the fog started to clear, and I started to realize what life I had been living. I started to realize how much I hated myself, you know? When I got to AA, I was the type of girl who, like, if you wanted to date me, I would, like, tell you how I have all these issues, you know? And how you don't want anything with me. You know what I mean? Like, you really don't want anything to do with me. Like, I'm helping you right now. And like, no, unlovable, you know, like I felt like I was completely unlovable. I had such low self-esteem. And honestly, I mean, my poor boyfriends who took me anyways, you know, where I held hostage. And we'll get into that in my sexual inventory. Well, I'm not going to tell you guys my sexual inventory, but my inventory portion of my sexual inventory. Great. Where's it going? Okay. So what happened is the fog started to clear and I really started to see what kind of a life I'd been living, and I really, 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 really wanted to stay sober. And I got out 45 days, you know, after being in my treatment facility. I was sober. It was the longest I'd ever been sober, completely sober before, you know, ever. And I got out and they told me to go to meetings. They told me to get a sponsor. I was also in a sobriety high school at the time. And they told me to do all these things that were going to help. And at the sobriety high school, like, you go to a sobriety high school, you have meetings, and you take drug tests Monday through Friday. And I honestly had every intention of staying sober. So we have an Alano Club. I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you guys have them here, or something similar, fellowship, you know, hall. We had those, and so I was told to go to 3 meetings a week, so I would, like, go after school on a Wednesday, and I would just, like, hit 3 in a row, you know what I mean? And, like, that was, like, my 3 meetings for the week, and I would get a sponsor who I didn't call, you know, and she had no idea that she was my sponsor, but it was someone who I could tell my sobriety high school that I was, you know, being sponsored by. And, you know, about 15 days later, my PO came up to me, and I was completely sober. I had not had a drink. I had not done anything, and I was so proud of myself, and it was so hard. It was so hard. 15 days later, I still hadn't had a drink. And after I was released from treatment, my PO looked at me and he said, I don't think you're sober. You know? And I got so mad. I was like, what do you mean you don't think I'm sober? Like, I'm completely sober. I'll give you a drug test right now. You know, whatever. Blah, 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 blah. I flipped out and I wanted to stay sober so bad, but I used that excuse to go get drunk. You know? And I'm going to read, hopefully if I can find it quick enough, I'm going to read a portion of what talks about the insanity of that. It says, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched. For this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuses to take that first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. The next day, we would ask ourselves, in all earnestness and sincerity, how it could have happened. In some circumstances, we have gone out deliberately to get drunk, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy of the like. But even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient in light of what always happened. I knew exactly what was going to happen when I picked up a drink. I wasn't one of those people, you know, whatever, they do the same thing over and expecting different results. Like, that wasn't my experience. That's not alcoholic insanity, you know. That's whatever, you know, Einstein, whatever, you know. But that's not alcoholic insanity. Alcoholic insanity is that, what I just read. And that's how I was told by my sponsor. And for me, I knew exactly what was going to happen for the most part. There was times where I tried to say maybe it would work different this time, you know. But for the most part, I knew exactly what was going to happen. And I found some trivial excuse to pick up again. You know, just like, screw it, whatever. Like, that's insane. I know that I'm going to end up locked up. I know that I'm going to lose my family. I know that I don't have any respect in the community, but like, that's already gone. I'm not going to get that back, you know? And I would drink anyways, you know? I drank every single time, no matter what. No matter how bad I wanted to stop, I could not. And so that's what happened after 15 days later. You know, I found myself justified by anger, and I picked up a first drink that I didn't even really want to have. You know, that for 45 days I wanted so badly to not pick up, I picked up that drink. And again, I was off and running, and I eventually ran away from home again. November 15th of 2004 was the day before my 15th birthday, and my mom had called me and told me that I had, you know, came up a dirty drug test, and that I was going to have to, I was going to be getting sent back to juvenile hall. And and I don't know about you guys, but like, the 15th birthday is like a rager, you know what I mean? So there was no way that I was going to miss that. Like, it was a big one, you know what I mean? The big 1-5. So there was like no way I couldn't go to that. So of course, you know what I do is I ran away from home, you know, with every intention to come back by, you know, Thanksgiving and have a nice Thanksgiving dinner with my family and then turn myself in, you know. And that's probably not what would have happened. But what ended up happening was that on November 20th of 2004, the police came to the door that I was staying at, and they knocked on the door. Said, Lindsay, you know, you have a warrant for your arrest. And for whatever reason, I didn't run. For whatever reason, this time I didn't run, you know. And I walked outside with my hands behind my back, ready to go, and I went in again. And, you know, I'd really like to tell you that there was like this big boom thing that happened in that last week. I can tell you I hurt people in ways that I felt I would never be able to make right, that I've been able to make right as a result of the ninth step and living amends, and the way that I've, you know, definitely taken the steps into my life, or tried, you know, as a way of life. I definitely have amended a lot of the relationships I never thought I was going to be able to fix. But it wasn't like a big boom thing that happened that I was like, oh man, this is why I'm going to get sober, you know. I had been living in hell for a really, really, really long time, and it was just that moment of clarity that I finally grabbed a hold of, if you will, you know. It was just that time where it was like, I got locked up, and I still didn't really want to. That time I would wake up sometimes wanting to be sober, and then the other times I wouldn't want to be sober, type thing, you know. The harder it would get for me to stay sober while I was in there and stuff. But, you know, by the time I got out, I had a lot of programs coming to see me, and I got out in early January of 2005, and I dove right into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was on the bracelet, on like house arrest, so I could only go to school, after school program, which was like daycare, and at 15, and then classy, still really classy, and then I had to go home, and then I can go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous if I chose. So of course I'm gonna choose. I'm on house arrest, you know, and like I did want to stay sober, but I definitely had a different motive there, you know. And I got out and I signed up for 90 meetings in 90 days, you know what I mean? And what happened for me is not what I expected to happen for me, you know. I'm telling you, like, the person who I am today is nothing that I wanted when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I knew I didn't want to drink, but I knew I didn't want to be a girl like me, you know. And and I knew that, and that's why, like, I'm totally one of those people where I heard a lot, like, grab somebody who you want what they have, you know what I mean? Like, I wanted the dude in the back with a bag of dope in his pocket. That was me. You know what I mean? If I would have done that, I would have been loaded immediately. Like, I had to find somebody who I saw consistently at meetings, or I saw at meetings, and that was happy. You know what I mean? And that sounded like they knew what was going on in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was just 90 meetings in 90 days, mainly because I wanted to smoke your cigarettes and eat your cookies, you know? But what ended up happening for me was different than what I had expected. And it was because I sat down for an hour and I listened, and I didn't leave the meeting, you know? And eventually I got a sponsor who was like a trillion times my age. And because I didn't think I could listen to anybody anywhere near my age, you know. And come to find out, I totally can. At the time, I was just like, I wanted someone who I was going to look at like they were someone who I could look up to, I guess, you know. And maybe a mother figure. And anyway, she was nothing like a mother. She just came over to my house, and we would chain smoke cigarettes, and we would read the book. And she told me to call her every single day. And when we got to a step in that book, we took that step, you know. In the beginning, like I said, you know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 15 years old. Like, my education was continuation high school, juvenile hall, and rehab, right? So I had no idea what an inventory was. Like, when they were like, oh, yeah, I was never afraid of the four step because I had no idea what that was. I wasn't afraid of amends because I'd never even heard of that word before, you know? Like, I didn't know what integrity was. I didn't know what, like, self-respect. I didn't know the idea of that. I knew, like, that maybe someone wanted that somewhere, you know? But, like, but I didn't know anything about the steps, so I had nothing to be afraid of, you know? And my sponsor got a big book dictionary for me, and she told me that every single time that I get to a word that I don't understand, to circle it and to write the definition next to it. And I used to go to young people's events early on, and I was so afraid. You guys, welcome to all of you guys. This is your first conference. Totally overwhelming. Like, I wanted, like, I was just, my first camp out I went to, it was like a huge camp out in California. And, like, I just, I buried myself in my big book. And everyone was like, oh, man, Lindsay's so solved. Look at her, like, going over there, reading that book. Like, with her big book dictionary. Like, man, she's going to stay sober. Like, that one right there. Yeah, she's a good girl. But, like, dude, I was so terrified. I was so terrified to reach my hand out to you and say hello that I'm Lindsay, you know, that I just hid in Alcoholics Anonymous in the big book, which was a good place to hide if you're going to hide. You know what I mean? Like, there could have been some worse places I could have gone. So that's a good place, you know. But still, I was so terrified. So welcome for the people who've never been to a WIPA conference or a WIPA, you know, convention. And you guys who have been here before, like, it's totally our duty, you know, to make sure that they're doing okay. If you see somebody who's lonely or not looking like they know anybody or completely terrified or whatever, like, come up and ask them how they're doing. You know what I mean? Like, that's what people did for me. When I was terrified, they came up and asked me how I was doing, you know, and they showed me how to have a good time. They took me to a meeting or whatever. And that's where I really fell in love with Young People Conferences, which hopefully I'll get into later, because, you know, you can get whatever you want at a conference, and I'm grateful that I was around people who took me to the meetings, you know. And so anyways, you know, totally terrified. I completely understand where you're at. Welcome to this conference. Totally understand. But I just jumped, like I said, you know, with my sponsor, I just jumped into the steps. And you know, I would circle the word and all that stuff. And I heard a lot in meetings when I was new also was stick around, you're going to hear your story, you know. And, like, I really held on to those words for a while, like, for a little bit, you know. I really held on to that. And I was kind of like, I look back now and I looked at so many differences at the time. If I would have waited to hear my story, I would have gotten drunk, because I can't go that long without a solution. I can't. I didn't hear my story for a year. My ears weren't open enough for a year. And I can guarantee you from my experience, I would have been loaded. I found myself in the pages of the book Alcoholics Anonymous with my sponsor. When I sat down and I read those pages with her, I found myself in black and white in those pages. And that gave me enough motivation and drive to go on with the rest of the steps, you know. And with powerless over alcohol, my life was unmanageable. You know, I was 15 years old. I thought that unmanageability was, like, all materialistic, you know. I didn't have a husband to lose. I didn't have a house. I didn't even have a bike, you know what I mean? Like, really, like, I didn't have a bike, you know. I didn't even have a skateboard. I didn't have a thing to lose. And so I thought that's what all of it was about. You know, I really did. And looking back now, my life was, on that level, it was unmanageable. But really what it means is that it was spiritually undisciplined, you know. I made every single decision in my life based on fear, dishonesty, resentment, selfishness, every single decision. And I was spiritually undisciplined, a.k.a., excuse my language, I was an asshole. You know, and I didn't know how to live life. And when it came to alcohol, something happened for me, and when I was drinking, was that I had a phenomenon of craving that came in, and I couldn't stop drinking once I picked up. And nowadays, when I look back, or whenever I hear a lot of people say, you know, and young people, you know, is that I'm afraid that it's just a phase, you know. And it talks about so clearly in the book. It says that craving never develops in the average or temperate drinker, ever. You know, so if I can relate to that, and I could look back at some of the experiences that I had, which thank God I had a sponsor who had me clarify what those experiences were, I'll know that I'm an alcoholic, you know. I'm an alcoholic till the day that I die, and I fully conceded to myself that I was, to my innermost self, like it says in the book, that I'm an alcoholic, like, just like the book tells me to do, you know. And when it came to unmanageability, when that stuff got broken down, and it was all about the spirituality of it all, you know, I started to kind of understand what was going on. I didn't know, I was so afraid when I was new, I didn't know how to really ask questions. I wish I would have more, but thank God I went to so many meetings where those questions were answered. That meeting that's my home group now I went to in my first year also, and that answered so many of my questions. With step two, you know, I didn't know about the God thing. I didn't have anything with, for, or against the whole God idea. But when it came to insanity, I also heard that statement, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. That's, I eventually heard that. And I also, I had my own idea of insanity, which was like wrapped up in a rubber room, right? And like that just wasn't my experience. That's many people's experience, but like that just was not mine, you know? And so I couldn't relate to that stuff. And then it was like doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. I couldn't relate to that either. But when I read that in the book, I was able to relate to that. I was able to relate to the fact that I kept picking up, even though I knew it was going to happen, I picked up anyways. But I had no mental defense against the first drink. And my sponsor started to talk to me about this whole relationship with a higher power and how that was going to get in between me and that drink. You know, and like I had this also, this idea. Thank God I didn't follow my ideas because I was so wrong, you know, and I'm still infrequently wrong. But I had this idea that I had to go into step two and I was going to have like this great best friend, like bestie with God. And like we were going to like skip everywhere and like, dude, like I was going to turn my, you know, my will and my life over. I didn't even know what a will was at 15. And like, I didn't know what any of that stuff meant, you know, but like I had this idea that we were going to be besties for the resties and like it was just going to be fine, you know. And like that was explained. I didn't feel like that right then. So I felt like I couldn't go on to step three. And this I hear a lot, and I feel so terrible for the person who's stuck on step two because they don't know if they're really that strong with God yet, you know? And really the way that it was explained to me, and the only reason I feel bad is because I know for me, I can't not drink, and I need the steps in order to stay sober, and I need a higher power in order to stay sober, you know? And it was vital for me to go through those steps if I was not going to drink again. But my sponsor really just said to me, like, this is just, you're going to tap into a source here. You're tapping into a source. You're just kind of like building a car that's going to get you through the rest of the steps. And slowly you're going to pick up the pieces on your way through the steps. And when she laid it out like that, it was a little bit easier. I didn't need to be besties for the resties yet. You know what I mean? I wasn't there yet, and that's okay. And I just went on to step three, you know, and I believe that she believed in all the stuff that the book said. And, hi. And, love you. So, and then I went on to step three, and, you know, at the time for me, and I think it's so important, you guys. A, first of all, like a drunk log. For a while, I went through a phase where I was like, oh man, this person's giving a drunk log, and blah, 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 blah. Like, man, that's extra long. I think it's huge that the alcoholic needs to identify. The newcomer in the room hopefully can identify with something that I have to say regarding alcoholism. It is huge and vital, you know, because they don't know about step 10 yet. You know, when I was new, I didn't care about step 10 yet. You know what I mean? So I think it's huge to be able to go through some of the steps. And also to give a drunk log, so hopefully somebody in the room will be able to relate to what I have to say, you know? But, you know, going into step three, it was definitely confusing. I didn't know what my will or my life was. I didn't know what any of that stuff meant. And my sponsor and the home group that I was going to at the time really broke it down for me also, and they just let me know that, that it's important, this decision that I'm making. It's a turn, like, they said a lot of stuff, like your thoughts and your actions. They said a lot of that stuff. But they said, you can make this decision, and it's important. This decision is big. But your decision means nothing unless you put pen to paper. It means nothing. It's completely, it doesn't matter what you did. You know, it doesn't matter what decision you make. It doesn't matter. I heard the three frogs on a log, you know. I can't say that joke right, not joke, but I can't say that right, so I'm not going to say that one. But I'm going to mess that up thoroughly, so I'm just going to avoid that at all costs. So I heard a bunch of, you know, all those little cool stories or whatever around step three, and then they just said it means nothing unless I put pen to paper in step four and get into action. And so I did that with my sponsor. I wasn't afraid of an inventory because I didn't know what an inventory was. I didn't know what taking stock was because I've never had a job. I had no clue what any of this stuff meant, and thank God I didn't because I was not afraid, you know? And I just put pen to paper, and, you know, my first inventory, I'll tell you guys really briefly if you're new and you're on your fourth step or whatever, this is what mine looked like. John, 12 pages of what he did to me, you know, personal relations, sexual relations, ambitions, blah, and then my part, selfish. That's it. Just a little bit. I'm just honest. I'm not going to go into that. I'm not going to write down pages and pages and pages about what I did, but this is a story about John. John messed me over, you know? He really screwed up. And like my sponsor, thank God, and honestly, I didn't do the steps amazing. I didn't do them perfect, but I did the steps to the best of my ability, and I stayed sober, you know? I stayed sober, and since then, I've been able to do a lot of inventories and a lot of house cleanings and stuff that were able to clear that stuff up, and my sponsor was really great, and she helped me to see the patterns. She got me to see all that stuff. She got me to see that, you know, the reason I'm resentful is because these things were threatened, you know? I thought my sexual relationship was going to be gone, you know? I was afraid of all these things and, like, how fear was bracketed. She was able to, like, have me list my fears list. Of course, my first one was, like, spiders, ghosts, my garage, my backyard, you know, like, all these things, like, that I was afraid of, right? Later on, when I started to really take a look at that stuff, I started to realize how fearful I was of the unknown, you know, and how many times I've acted out on those fears, how fear I was of like being alone, dying alone, that God's not there, you know. Like right now, you guys, like I have an amazing life. I seriously love my life, and this is why when I was new, I did not want to be that me, because I'm like, oh, life is so great. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, but like seriously, like I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have such an amazing life. And you know, today it's really easy for me to trust God and trust the process because life is so good, you know. But you strip me of that. You strip me of everything that I have, my friends, my mom, my dad, the relationships that I've built with these people, my friends in AA, my sponsees, everything, my phone, my purse, you know, my clothes, everything, right? And I'm like raw, like naked in front of my creator, and it's just me and my creator. I'm fearful. I'm afraid he's not going to be there. I'm afraid that I'm not wanted. I'm afraid to trust that process. I'm afraid, I'm truly afraid to be completely alone with God, you know? And that was like what I've really found in my inventory, and it was really helpful for me to start putting independence in my higher power than into my boyfriend, than into my clothes, than into my job, you know? When you strip me of all that stuff, I'm so afraid. And that's when it really, you know, it really matters the whole time, but that's where I really got to see what was going on. Is like, yeah, life's good now, but what happens when my ass falls off? You know, what happens when whatever, like, what do I do then? You know what I mean? And that's what I was able to see in later inventory also. When I got to my sexual inventory, and then I'm kind of try to breeze through because I know that these, I have, how much time do I have? So I started to, I'm just going to talk about what my life is like today, but I think it's so important, you know, to definitely go through the first four because I know how hard that was, you know, for all my sponsees and for me also to finally take the steps and going into the steps. But you know, when I did that sexual inventory, you guys, like, I was so afraid to do that sexual inventory, and what I found is that the most beneficial thing in my sexual inventory, besides finding out everything, you know, all my part, you know what I mean, was the fact that I got to create an ideal. You know, and like, this is what my sponsor basically said to do, is she told me to write down the perfect man, write it down, and I was like, oh man, all this stuff, like, honest, driven, motivated, like, educated, has a job, blah, 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 and I didn't have any of those things, you know, and she was like, what are you willing to bring to a relationship, and I couldn't name anything that I was willing to bring, well, I could name a couple things, but that was about it, you know, and so I can name some things, okay? So, shut, Eddie. Okay, so when she pointed that stuff out is that I wasn't willing to bring any of that stuff to a relationship, you know? And then she let me know that that ideals list that I made had nothing to do, when she told me to write down a guy, it had nothing to do with the man at all, nothing. Nothing. That's the woman that I try to live up to on a daily basis, and I fall short consistently, all the time, you know, but that's the woman that I try to, that I strive to be, you know, and I, like I said, it's an ideal, you know, I never live up to it completely, all the time, consistently, but that's the woman that I want to be, ultimately. When I wake up in the morning, and I, you know, and I pray to God, and I ask God to keep me sober, and show me the role that he's assigned, and let me just play that role, you know, and not take my will back when I do all those things, like, and I'm honest, I'm not lying, everything. Like, everything that on my ideals list wasn't about a guy at all. Had nothing to do with a guy. And my sponsor was really clear about that. And over time, through going through relationships and going through breakups and, like, learning, like, I used to be really jealous, you know? And, like, jealousy is a normal human emotion. It doesn't mean that I can check your phone. Anger is a normal emotion. It doesn't mean I can punch you in the face. Like, there's limits. You know what I mean? And I never understood limits to anything, right? I just didn't get it. And, like, and when I was working with a sponsor, after every relationship I've had, slowly I've become a better girlfriend in all my relationships. And that's branched out. Slowly I've become a better daughter. Slowly I've become a better sister. And slowly, you know, I've become a better granddaughter and a better employee, you know. And I'm definitely going to go in as a result. Like I said, that car that I ended up building, what happened for me is that going through the fourth step and the ninth step, and the seventh and eighth and, you know, sixth and all, everything that I didn't miss when I was counting, because you guys obviously can't count either during the steps, so don't judge me right now. So so as I was going through, you know, up till nine, what I realized is I was like scratching the stains off my soul is what it was, you know? And the reason I was scratching those stains off my soul is so I could be a clear channel of God. Hopefully God will work through me well. I'm nothing, you know? I'm just another member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just another drunk. That's it. No better, no worse. I'm just a drunk. But hopefully God will work through me well. You know, hopefully God will be able to convey a message to you of like the fact that I was a drunk, you know, and that I don't have to drink anymore and I don't want to die. I was never suicidal prior to Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. When I'm not working the steps, I want to kill myself. You know what I mean? And it's been a constant thing of like going back to my sponsor, you know, and she's not a Nazi sponsor. She's one of those people who will like give you enough rope to hang yourself, and I'm constantly hanging myself, you know, and I'm constantly seeking a spiritual solution, and I'm constantly creating experiences to be able to benefit someone else with, as long as I stay sober, you know, and in regards to my family, and I really want to get into that stuff, and it's because that's so important and been such a vital part of my recovery. And you know, like I said, my relationship with my mom was completely crashed. It was done. My brother, completely over. You know, my dad moved out. My parents got divorced. It was just a mess. And honestly, at 5 years sober, I was so active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was so great. And I was, you know, traveling all around and like outreaching for conferences and bidding. And like I had, you know, a lot of sponsees and all this stuff. Like I could tell you guys all these things that I was doing, you know, but I was never at home. I was never building that relationship with my mom. You know, I made amends at like 2 years sober that were hollow words, not followed up with any action. And it talks about in step eight so much. It says, well, it says something. Basically, it's saying you're doing the action, you know, like you're doing it. You're showing how you've changed. And of course, I'm gonna blank, right? Of course, right? So it's talking about doing it and making sure that you're showing how your life has changed when you're making this amends. Not just making this amends and disappearing, but showing up, you know, showing up where you can and showing that your life has changed and you're a different person, you know? It talks a lot about that. And with my mom, what I started to do was at 5 years sober, I realized that I hated her. I hated everything about her. I hated her voice. I lived with her, you know. Everyone told me, was like, oh, you know, she's an alcoholic. She suffers from alcoholism. Same with my brother. And everyone told me, man, Lindsay, when you turn 18, move out. And I'm so grateful that I didn't take that suggestion, because I would have left that home a broken home, and I would have never been able to mend it like I've been able to mend it, you know. I would have never been able to fix that. I would have left that home a broken home, and I would have never looked back, because I know how I am when it comes to relationships, and I know how it goes, and I would have never picked up the phone and never called her, you know. I would have missed her birthday. I would have missed it all. Sober. 5 years sober. And at 5 years sober, I never hated anyone more than I hated my mother, and I would come home, and I would look her in the eyes and not even want to look at her, not want to hear her voice. It was like, you know, nails on a chalkboard. And I got to this place where I was like talking to my friend in Southern California, who has such an amazing relationship with his mother, and they used to not. And I asked, how did you do that? You know, I started to realize how like sick it was. I don't want to hate my mom. I eventually, you know, however long from now, 10 years from now, when I have, you know, hopefully eventually have kids at some point later on, way later on in life, that like, that I can have them have a grandma, you know what I mean? And like, I can have them be an active participant in the life that, you know, of my kids, you know. And I wasn't going in that direction with my family. And I talked to this person who lived in Orange County at the time and still does, and he just told me what he did. You know, what I did, again, is I turned to Alcoholics Anonymous for suggestions on how to mend a relationship. And you guys have all done it. You know, a lot of you guys have mended relationships that you guys thought were broken forever. And I just turned to Alcoholics Anonymous again, and you guys told me what to do. And I showed up every single day at my mom's house. I asked her how her day was. I didn't, you know, talk over her. I didn't close off. And I just listened. And I acted as if, you know, and slowly I didn't want to kill myself from her voice anymore, you know. And slowly I wasn't talking back to her. And slowly I wasn't being a sarcastic screw, you know, whatever that I was being. And slowly I started caring, you know, and I started showing up and showing up and showing up when I didn't want to be there. And I told her that I loved her when I didn't mean it. And eventually I started to love her, you know. Eventually I started to be there for her. And every single year on Mother's Day, she would have told you, you know, we asked mom, what do you want for Mother's Day? And she would say to me and my brother, she'd say, I want you to just leave me alone, give me some peace and quiet, and please don't have the cops show up at the door. That was for my brother after I got sober, but like all the way up when we were growing up, you know what I mean? And at this time, I had been working on my amends with my mom for about 6 months, and it was probably the most important thing going on in my life, was like my relationship with God and my sponsees and my relationship with my family that I had broken. And I asked my mom what she wanted for Mother's Day, and she looked at me and she said, I'd like you to stay, you know. And like, that stuff for me, man, like, that's powerful stuff for me. For someone who didn't have any respect for me, who I hated, completely hated, I was able to completely turn that relationship around, you know. That brother that used to not be able to have, he never stood up for me, he would have talked shit to me or about me behind my back, wherever, and he had no reason to even respect me, you know. And I didn't give him a reason. He used to hold me at night, even though he hated me, he would hold me and like just hope that I was not gonna die when I was drunk, you know. And I just don't die, you know. And he just hated me. And he was in jail at the time. He's also an active alcoholic, you know, and he was in jail at the time. And I remember how bad I wanted mail when I was in jail. And so I just started writing him. And I wrote him like every week, and I would send him pictures of when I would outreach Wacky Paw Host Committee. I was for Yosemite, and I would send him these pictures of all the places that I went that year, you know. And I started visiting the jail, and I would visit him once a week. And the first time I walked into that room, he was expecting his probation officer. The first time I walked in, he broke down and started crying, you know. And he had never, ever done that for me before. He broke down and he started crying. And he started looking at me and he started talking about his alcoholism, you know, which he wasn't able to talk to about anybody else. But we can win that confidence over in another alcoholic in a matter of minutes. You know, like he knows that I've been there. He knows that I've been there. And he knows that I don't have to drink anymore, you know. And I visit him every single week, all the time. And then eventually he was released. He told me that he was released slowly. He started telling me he wanted to get involved with Wacky Paw slowly. Slowly he started telling me he wanted to try Alcoholics Anonymous. And he got out, and that night I picked him up. And then that night we went to Orange County. I got an approved for this probation officer. We went to Orange County so I can go speak out there at a Day in the Steps event, you know, and I didn't know what our relationship was going to be like. I didn't know how it was going to go with him being free. I didn't know how any of that stuff was going to go, you know, but I just showed up as if he was a newcomer, and I tried to remember that he's got guys on his side to show him what to do, and I'm just going to be an example, and all I could do is be the best goddamn example of Alcoholics Anonymous I could try to be, you know. That's all I can do. And I was sitting outside of a meeting one time, and he was being a goofball like he is, you know, and some kid looked at him. It's like a couple days after he was released, some kid looked at him and said, "Wow, you must be related to Lindsay," you know, and I started laughing. I was like, "Oh, whatever," you know, and he looked at him and he said, "That's the best compliment you can ever give to me. I have more respect for her than anybody else in my life," you know, and like, this is someone who hated me, and as a direct result of taking the steps into my life as a way of life, I mended that relationship, you know. Now he'll talk to me about stuff he won't talk to anybody else about. On my birthday, he eventually relapsed, and on my birthday, you know, he missed my 21st birthday, and I was pretty sad about it, but I understand because I know what it's like to be out there. November 21st is my sobriety, and I called him that day. I tried calling him, and he yelled, "Happy birthday," and I said, "Bro, you're about 5 days late, dude," and he goes, "No, I mean for your sobriety birthday." He's like, I'll never forget the day that you got sober. I'll never forget how much you've changed. You're the most amazing woman I've ever met, and I look up to you, you know, and I didn't want to call you on your birthday because I was loaded, and I didn't want to disrespect you. This is the type of stuff for me, like the emotional aspect of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I started actually taking the steps into my life as a way of life, this is the type of stuff that started happening for me. I had a mother who never, ever, ever talked to me about anything finally come to me and tell me that she's an alcoholic and she wanted to go to a meeting, you know? I have my brother who wanted to go to a meeting, and he's not sober right now, and I tell you right now, when he's not sober and he's on the run, I check the booking log every single day, you know? I absolutely love him, and I'd rather have him in jail or in Alcoholics Anonymous than anywhere else. But I know that when he's ready to get sober, I know that I can send him to you people, and you guys will know what to do. You know, you guys will know about the steps. You guys will know what to show him. And like, that's a huge deal. I know that Alcoholics Anonymous will always be there for my brother, always. And all I can continue to do is try to be a good example of a good example, you know, and like, and the way that my life has changed, he'll be able to see that through my actions. And I know that, you know, I know that he has a place to go, and same with my mom when she's ready, you know. The last thing I kind of want to touch on, not even really, you know, is I talked a little bit about my education. With my education being so limited, I was so insecure for a long time. Like I said, I was that girl who would have told you all my issues. Man, you don't want to be with me. You know what I mean? I was that girl. And about 5 years sober, after I kind of took a step back from young people, and I decided it was time to go to school. For 5 years, I held it off. I was so afraid of going to school. I thought I was stupid. Like my last relationship, I was just so insecure. He was super smart, great. You know, family had master's degree. I didn't even know what that was. I didn't know what a major was. I'd never been talked about college. I was the first person in my family to go back to college, or to go to college. Period, you know, and I had no idea how to do it, but I just signed up, and people told me to show up early, leave late, ask questions, and find somebody in class who knows what they're talking about, and they'll guide you through it, and I did that, you know. I went to class, I was super afraid, I found a nerdy kid who looked like he knew what was going on, I asked him to basically tutor me, you know, and I got straight A's in that class. I wrote my first essay ever in my entire life last semester, you know what I mean, ever, and I was a straight A student. I took 9 units, and I passed all my classes, and this is from somebody who thought they were so stupid, you know, who thought they were such a piece of shit, they could never achieve anything, they were never going to go anywhere, you know. Like, I applied to be a plumber, you know what I mean, because I was afraid to go to school. They laughed at me, but I applied. I was going to move to Arizona to paint houses when I was 15, you know, like, because I didn't want to go to school. You know, and like, I was so petrified of going back to school, and all it took was me literally doing what I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what everyone said? If you do school like you do Alcoholics Anonymous, Lindsay, you'll be a straight A student. They said that because you show up on time, you leave late, you talk to new people, and you have a sponsor, and you know how to be sponsored. You know, and if you can stick to those things, you can do anything you want. You can do anything you want, you know. So that was one of the huge things that just recently, when I got a 4.0, man, that changed everything for me. I did that on my own, and I was able to walk through my fear, and I was able to go to school and get good grades, you know what I mean? And I guess the very last thing I'm going to talk about is the relationship with God. I think I'm probably done in a couple minutes here, yeah? Is it done? Is it 9:30 to the end? My relationship with God, you know, it's definitely been shaky on and off. It's been really, really strong at points, and it's been not so strong at points, you know. But when I started to go back to school, what happened for me is my schedule changed a lot. And when my schedule changed, I couldn't go to as many meetings, and I really had to get really, really, really close with God. And like I talked about, you know, what I talked about with me being raw in front of my Creator, you know, I really started to realize how my dependence was everywhere else but in a relationship with a higher power. And I started to pray every single day. And I started to build this relationship with a higher power that I didn't expect ever to have, you know. And today, I honestly, like Ruth talked about, and I'm going to close with that, like with what Ruth talked about, with having a life being purposeful, I never had that before. No one ever called me to do anything, you know. They definitely didn't want me to be there. And as a result of taking the steps into my life, creating a relationship with a God that I found through taking the steps in my life. Like I said, you know, I don't want to take a drink. I don't want to kill myself. I haven't thought about drinking yet today until I came up here to talk about drinking. Your fault. And I have a life that I would have, like, you know, never wanted. And that I'm so happy that I have. You know, I want to thank the host committee again so much and thank Eddie for asking me to be of service. Welcome if you're new. Thank you.